Thank you for checking out Random Musings from the Clinical Trials Guru. It really means a lot to me that you're listening to this podcast. If you listen and you like the content, then make sure you subscribe, make sure you leave a review. Please do that. And also go check me out on some of my other platforms. I have a long-running YouTube channel. I've got a blog, theclinicaltrialsguru.com. If you're interested in becoming a CRA or you're interested in getting a career in this industry, go to thecraacademy.com. If you're a research site owner interested in getting more studies for your site or negotiating better contracts for your site, go to my blog, theclinicaltrialsguru.com, and check it out. I offer consulting services. If you're a pharma, biotech, life sciences company, a CRO, I own a startup CRO, and we're here to help you, whatever it is you want. If you're a CRO, we can white label a lot of services for you. We have CRA coverage across the country at cost. We can do this at scale. If you're a pharma company, we are a full service CRO, and we're very confident in our pricing, and we are extremely competitive at bidding. And if you're also interested in your own digital marketing and leveraging a podcast maybe for yourself, reach out to me, dan@theclinicaltrialsguru.com. Again, thank you very much and enjoy the show. Hello, everybody. Welcome to episode 236 of Random Musings from the Clinical Trials Guru. I've got Nikki Thomas on. Nikki, this is a really important interview we're going to do because Nikki was on one of our webinars and I was explaining how people can get started working in the industry. And I always talk about patient recruitment as the Trojan horse. Nikki has actually done that in the past, and she's going to explain her story, and we might have the meeting cut in and out every couple minutes, but I will edit. Don't worry. Nikki has actually done that, so this will be good for the people that want to work in the industry, but also Nikki is a feasibility specialist. So this is going to be really good content for all you site owners or people that work at sites. So Nikki, welcome. Thank you very much for coming on.
Hi, Dan. Hi, Guru Nation. I'm excited to be here. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So why don't you give us a little bit of your background?
Sure. So when you were mentioning about patient recruitment being the Trojan horse last week, that's why I started messaging you furiously, because I said, that was me. So I have a very different kind of background. So I'm actually a professional actress and dancer. And never in a million years did I think I'd wind up in clinical research.
How does that happen?
Yeah, so it was kind of a funny sort of life I've had. I had my degree in broadcast communications, and I always wanted to be a broadcaster. I got married to somebody in the military a week after college graduation, so there was lots of moving around, and I lived in Alaska for a while, and I actually was the morning news anchor out there.
I saw that on your LinkedIn.
Yeah.
Doing a little bit of pre-interview research that you were a morning news anchor in Alaska.
Yeah, so I was producing, editing, and anchoring the morning news in Alaska for $10 an hour, and I was waking up at 3.
Really?
At 3:30 every morning. So this job had a turnover rate of 2 months, and I stuck it out for 9 months. I actually held the record. So this was good training for me to be a patient recruitment specialist with the resiliency wow. that's needed. So anyway, I think we just faded out. There you are.
There you are.
So down the road, I went through a divorce. The marriage didn't work out. I came back. I was living with my family in Philadelphia, and I was looking for full-time work. And at this point, I was an ex-Army wife, so my resume was very sparse because we were moving so much. I really didn't have much. So I said, what am I going to do? So I was in touch with a college professor that I had, and he gave me the lead. He said, there's a research and they're looking for a patient recruitment specialist. And I said, well, I'm an actress and a dancer and a news anchor, and what am I going to do? So he said, just go for the interview. You know, he says it's kind of more of a sales job, really.
So you knew nothing about clinical research at this point. Some recruiter just reached out to you.
I actually even asked, I went in and I was asking, like, have people died in these trials? Like, I was terrified. The whole thing was very foreign to me. So I met with the doctor, the PI who had this practice going for about 20 years. And he took a chance on me, a big chance. And, you know, he said, you just have to really be able to talk to people. And so he had me making calls from day one. There was no there was no easing me into it. It was just literally gave me, you know, some
so
verbiage.
Who hired you, though? Was it a site or what? Who was it?
Yeah, it was a site.
A small site or medium?
Yeah, it's a small site. So, and there's an added challenge for this site because it's not affiliated with the hospital. It's a standalone research site. So they really heavily rely on a patient recruitment specialist to bring in patients. Yes.
Okay. And they probably like you for your communication background because of the anchor job, right?
Right.
So they figure this person's at least good at communicating with others.
Exactly. And I think that's why he was willing, along with the recommendation from my college professor, to take the chance on me. So I started in and I was terrified, but I was, you know, just trying to learn what research was and how I could explain what research was to patients. And there was an added challenge because these were psychiatric studies that I was recruiting.
That's so right up my alley.
Yeah. So having a show business background, dealing with, you know, a lot of different types of personalities, you know, was pretty helpful for me. So I learned soon into having the job that my lack of medical knowledge was actually helpful because I could explain the research studies in layman's terms that the patients could understand. So it actually was pretty beneficial and it worked really well. And of course I got more and more comfortable and the community outreach aspect of the job kind of came really natural to me too, you know, building up relationships with doctors and other referrers.
Yeah, because psych is hard. I mean, I've been doing psych since I started in 05. We're still doing psych. We have recruiters now, but it's tough. Like traditional advertising doesn't really work. It's grassroots. You got to get out in the community, lunch and learns, you know, so that's like the hardest to recruit for.
Yeah, right. So I kind of came in right doing the most difficult. So I was there for it was about 3.5 years, and at this point I was really in a groove, and you know, really doing well. In fact, I was recruiting particularly well for an Alzheimer's study that was going on, and the sponsor took notice of it, and the recruitment vendor they were working with took notice of it. So this is how the next job came about. So I got recruited to work for that recruitment agency.
So the sponsor took notice of what was it?
Of just how I was recruiting for the study.
Really? Okay. So you guys were a top enroller, one of the top.
Exactly. We were one of the top enrollers. So they
And they asked your PI, how are you doing this? And he said, Nikki, pretty much.
Right. I was actually in contact with them, but yes, they got to know me, and they were working with a recruitment agency called BioClinica, which was...
I know BioClinica. We use them for a lot of our CRA Academy stuff. Big, huge vendor. Okay.
Yes. So they have a smaller, not as well-known patient recruitment and retention agency, and that was who I went to work for right after
they stole you. Because your PI did such a good job, he lost his best employee.
Basically. But, you know, from the get-go, the PI had told me he is a small business and there wasn't a lot of upward mobility. He was very transparent about that.
Okay.
And I was so blessed, and to this day, I'm so blessed that he gave me that opportunity, but there really wasn't much further for me to go.
Right.
So
consider study coordinator after a while? Like,
no, I didn't. Yeah. Was never in my. I didn't think I think my communication skills are better suited for the more of the marketing side of things.
For what you're doing now.
Right. I'm not ready to take blood and do all of that. I think you have to kind of know where your skill set is.
Right. And so what are you doing?
I was never interested in being a coordinator.
So how long were you a recruiter until you got this feasibility specialist job?
Right. So it was about 3.5 years that I was at the site. And then I went to work for BioClinica, and I was there for about 2 years. I was doing marketing feasibility for them. So kind of putting marketing strategy together, doing research in different therapeutic areas as we would get potential studies, just doing patient research.
How long were you with BioClinica? Because this keeps cutting in and out.
Yeah, I'm sorry. That's okay. I was with them for almost 2 years.
Okay. And now you're with someone else?
Now I'm with CSL Behring. So now I'm working for a sponsor, which is very exciting. And I started here about 8 months ago, and I'm doing study feasibility.
Okay. So you went from patient recruitment at a small site, which I recommend everybody try to do if you want to get a foot in this industry. And then from there, here's the beautiful thing. Like I tell all the wannabe CRAs, once you get in there as a recruiter, try to be a coordinator, but you took a different route, which is fine. I mean, you knew what you wanted, but try to become a coordinator, then try to work at a CRO, and then eventually at the sponsor. Those are like the ideal positions. But you went the other route because you know your skill set. So you went from patient recruiter, then you went to BioClinica as also feasibility analyst. Patient recruitment.
Yeah.
Okay, patient recruitment at BioClinica. Was your role getting patients or getting sites to use their service?
Well, we would have patients. We would recruit the patients for the sponsors.
Okay. So very much related to what you were doing as a patient recruiter at the site level with BioClinica for 2 years, you said?
Mm-hmm.
And now you went on to the sponsor level where you're doing feasibility surveys.
Correct. So now I'm looking at historic comparable trials to see recruitment rates and to look at what countries we need to go to recruit and what feasible timelines for recruitment are. So I've been learning a lot since I've been here, and it's been amazing. It's a whole different realm for me, but I love it. And I'm also still involved with some patient engagement initiatives here, because they know my background. And I'm also involved with some communications initiatives as well, because they know about my news background. So they're also helping. I'm doing some internal communication, doing like employee spotlight interviews and that kind of thing. It's been a very interesting ride, and it all started because I started recruiting patients. And I will say that everybody here. So I've really been doing this for 5 years, pretty much. It's a little over 5 years now. And I've had quite a trajectory. And everybody here seems to really respect the fact that I came from a site, because they know the understanding that you get when you come from a site level. And when you're in the trenches recruiting patients, you know, you get like the spread.
Everyone working at a site has no idea how much value they bring to a sponsor, if they should ever hire them, because sometimes sponsors are so disconnected from the sites, they don't know what's realistic and what's not practical, but the sites do. So you guys understand that. We got to have you speak at our conference, Nikki. I just thought of this, but in October in Orlando, we're going to have you speak, and then so we'll get you a pass and hotel. And hopefully you could use your marketing skills to convince your company to sponsor a booth. Okay.
Yeah, that sounds great. I'll actually be in Orlando for Scope in 2 weeks. I've never been there before. So
Scope is good. Scope is good. I was there 2 years ago. So what are you doing? So, okay, like as a feasibilities analyst, like I'm interested in what you're doing right now for your feasibility analyst role. And then I'm also interested in all the marketing stuff you do for them as well.
Yeah, so I'm not doing too much marketing here now. The feasibility part, so we have, there's study feasibility, there's country feasibility, and site feasibility. Some of our site feasibility is outsourced if it's a bigger study. Some of it's done within our team. And then the study feasibility, I'm using an enrollment planning application to build out enrollment curves. To look at the SIV schedule, to look at the screening ramp up and the recruitment ramp up, and then basically building out a plan that gets approved by the study team so that we can see if we're remaining on track as the study begins.
Are you the one that like looks at the results from these feasibility surveys?
Yeah, when it's in-house, yes, we do. We collect the results and we provide them to the study team. So
are you aware that most sites are lying?
Well, remember, I came from a site. So.
Yeah, so you should know, right?
So when I see that, I always, it's like you have to discount most of what is being said. You know?
So you guys do discount, right?
Yeah, we do. We take into account the beef up that happens when those feasibility questionnaires are filled out. But
right.
I'm very aware of that.
And it's always like 10% of the sites that are actually not lying. And then they actually like produce what they said, right?
Right.
And then there's everyone else, right?
Exactly. Exactly. Yes. And, you know, as a recruiter, you know, my heart goes out. Those recruiters are always held to whatever the PI promised.
Right.
And then you have to deliver. I was in that scenario many times.
if those sites even have recruiters, some of those sites use the coordinators to recruit.
It's true. And that's such a heavy workload, because being a coordinator is difficult enough, but then I can't imagine having to recruit on top of that, because I was a dedicated full-time recruiter and I felt I was doing just, I never had enough time, you know, just in that alone, because I was recruiting 15 to 20 studies at any given time. And my PI had a goal that I was to reach 15 randomizations a month. You know, that was his goal for me every month. I made it happen a couple of times. I was able to make it happen a couple of times.
15 randomizations a month. How many studies was that?
It was about 12 to 15 studies.
Oh, okay. So one randomization a month. Yeah, those are good numbers.
Yeah.
Wow. That's a good site. They must have made good money with those, the amount of studies and the amount of patients they were getting. So very good job, Nikki. We wanted to give advice, and we're going to get you back on again another time when it's not laggy. And I'm serious about you speaking at the conference, because this could be a module in and of itself, how to start recruiting patients. If you have zero experience, like look at Nikki, she knew nothing about research. Right, she didn't even know what recruitment was. She was lucky enough that someone found her for it, sought her out.
Yeah.
You're not going to be that lucky. You need to go out and seek these things on your own. But you are watching, listening, and you understand what patient recruitment is. So do you think that's a feasible route for people to go?
Oh, absolutely. It's easily, like you can easily come in, like you said, as the Trojan horse in that way and learn. And you get to see everything that happens at the site. You get to see watch the coordinators, the regulatory person, site manager, just watch the doctors and the patients at the visits. It's really, and again, I had no medical background at all. And I came in and was able to learn quickly and do a really good job. And I think that, like what you said, it's just the best way to kind of get your in. And then you can go in so many different directions from there.
Anywhere you want to go is where you can go. Okay, so we gave the job seekers some advice. Can we give the sites some advice for how to stand out on the feasibility survey? What makes a site stand out? By putting a million patients as their database?
That will make them stand out in a bad way. Because, yeah, you're looking for just, you know, them to be honest about their capabilities and what's in their database and how they're recruiting and what their site facilities are and how much time they have available and what competing studies they have. So, I mean, my best advice is just to be honest and then let the chips fall where they may.
So be honest, plus or minus 20%.
Exactly.
That's my strategy. That's a reasonable strategy, right?
Yeah, that sounds good.
And then now some advice for the sponsors and CROs. Let's say a brand new biotech or a brand new CRO or a startup biotech doing their first study is planning a real trial, okay, an FDA-regulated study. what do they do? What advice do you have for them? Because maybe you can speak about this at our conference too, but what advice do you have for them as far as feasibility planning? Like you said, site study and country, right? So can you give them some advice?
Yeah, so we use several tools. You know, Sightline is a great tool, and that's sort of Site Trove, to look at clinical trials that were done in the past that are similar, and you can get there's a whole wealth of information there about, you know, what the screen fail rate, the dropout rate, the randomization rate, what countries they went to. We have other tools as well. Global Data is another great resource. And then we use Study Optimizer, which is an IQVIA application.
Ah, okay. And
there's some great information in there too. You can look
what
at
was that first one?
Site Trove, which is Sightline. Yes, okay. They have Site Trove. But we use Study Optimizer, and that has some great, they have repository of country performance information and also site performance information. So it's a really great starting point, you know. So we take a lot of time in the study planning phase just to make sure that, you know, we're making the right assumptions, mm-hmm. and that we have the right timeline prepared.
Wow. Okay. This is good advice. And are you going to be speaking or wanting to speak on these topics?
Sure, we can do that. I mean, I'll be very honest that this, as far as study feasibility, I've been here for 8 months, so I am still kind of fairly new. I wouldn't by any stretch call myself the expert, but I've learned a great deal and I'm excited about it. So I would certainly be happy to speak to this as well.
Yeah, by October you'll have 8 more months, so it'll be no problem. Actually, 10
months. Well, then I'll be an expert by October. Yeah.
Yes, you'll be an expert. Good, great advice. We got to do this again. What a story. I mean, who would have thought, you know, that you'd be a clinical researcher? Are you still interested in acting?
Actually, yes. I'm an actress with the Screen Actors Guild, SAG-AFTRA.
Really?
So I am still acting, and I'm a professional dancer, so I do, you know, dance events when they come up. So I'm still, and that's the great part, that I'm able to pursue my passion. But as anybody knows in the arts and show business, that just doesn't pay the bills. So
no, that's what I've heard.
Yeah, so I prefer to you know, be financially stable and, you know, be able to live the life I want, and then pursue my passion on the side. But I will say, and this may sound cheesy, but I am passionate about my job too. I do love engaging with patients, and I love, you know, just being part of the clinical trial process. It's very exciting to know that you're part of something that can change so many lives.
And you're still using your skill set or your acting skills, I guess, when it comes to what you're currently doing as far as like internal marketing. You said you're doing a lot of like internal stuff.
Yeah,
what are you doing?
I was asked by our new, we have a new vice president of clinical development operations. She's amazing. And when I introduced myself to her, she came in here. She started a couple months ago, and I just went into her office and introduced myself. I took 5 minutes. I had very prepared what I was going to say to her, and I gave her my background in a quick nutshell. And of course, I mentioned that I was a news anchor, and she remembered that. And she called me into her office a couple weeks later and asked if I would lead an internal communications initiative, basically just interviewing team members and writing little spotlight portfolios for them.
Wow.
So, yeah.
What is that for? Like an internal marketing tool for you guys?
More just so that we all, because we're growing at such a fast clip, this company, this department, so that we all kind of know who each other is and what we do.
Okay. How big are you guys?
So, the department, clinical development operations, is about 250 people. And so I'll be interviewing everybody eventually. And this is in addition to my feasibility role. So.
Right. Yeah, you do, but that's good. I mean, become as much of a generalist as you can, because you've got the skills exactly. to do a whole lot in this industry, and you're just getting started.
Yeah, that's right. Just getting started.
Good, Nikki. I appreciate it.
For from here. Thank you, Dan. I'm a big fan of the Guru Nation. It's been really helpful to me through the years. I've tuned in, or if you know something comes up and I'm not sure what it is, I go and it's a great resource. So thank you.
Thank you. We need you on regularly. maybe there's some stuff we can talk about off the air about some reporting in the industry. I have a thing called the Clinical Scoop, which is about to take off this year. But we'll do more interviews with you. And I would really love for you to speak at our conference, at least about the recruitment angle of getting in, but maybe even about the study feasibility planning, which Great. By October you'd have doubled your expertise in this
My
area.
My knowledge base. I love it. Well, I would love to be there. I'd be honored.
Good. We'll be in touch. Thank you very much, Nikki. I will end the interview. And thank you, everyone, for listening and watching. And we'll catch you all later. Bye-bye.
So, hey, everybody. Thank you very much for listening to another episode of Random Musings from the Clinical Trials Guru. Again, if you haven't already, make sure you subscribe to this podcast. Make sure you leave a review, if you could be so kind, please. And also go to theclinicaltrialsguru.com if you're interested in learning more about who I am, who some of my guests are. You can have access to some of my YouTube videos. I do a lot of videos about clinical research. So go to theclinicaltrialsguru.com. And you can also call or text me anytime, 949-415-6256. Also follow me on any social media platform. It's Dan Svera. And you can also email me if you'd like, dan@theclinicaltrialsguru.com. Thank you very much.